Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by 123.ie. Don't make insurance a hot topic. Just go to 123.ie, where simple is smarter.
The golden age of piracy is regarded by many as the 1600s into the 1700s, when pirates were at first largely supported by American colonists. And while the movie depiction of pirate ships is of them being wild and dangerous, the governance of one was surprisingly organized. Eric J. Dolan is the author of Black Flags, Blue Waters. Eric, good afternoon.
Afternoon.
What led to the rise of piracy, certainly around the American coasts?
Well, it started out in the mid-1600s down in the Caribbean. It was the era of the buccaneers, and there was a lot of interchange between the colonies and the buccaneers. Merchants from the colonies went down to sell pirates in the Caribbean goods, and then some pirates came to the colonies and settled down. But what really took off in the late 1600s is when the so-called Red Seamen, men largely from the American colonies, would get into ships, go around the Cape of Good Hope into the Indian Ocean, where they'd attack Mughal ships transiting between India and the Red Sea ports of Jeddah and Mocha, full of treasure, people going on the Hajj. And then they would bring that treasure back to the American colonies, which are on the outpost of England, you know, in the Netherlands, and felt that they were treated rather poorly by the mother country. And they welcomed these Red Sea pirates back because they brought one of the things that the colonists most desired, which was ready cash, silver pieces of eight, gold doubloons. They were often starved of currency. So the Red Sea pirates were welcomed with open arms in the colonies. And for about 10 years, many Red Sea pirates took their riches and settled down in the colonies and became upstanding citizens.
When did it start to change then?
Well, towards the end of the 1600s, as you can imagine, pirates attacking the valuable East India trade, which is a bulwark of the English economy, got Parliament and the Crown quite upset. So there were a number of measures taken, legal measures. There were ships, warships sent out both to the colonies and to the Indian Ocean to attack pirates. And there was really a clamping down on Red Sea piracy. And by about 1700, it had stopped, essentially.
Yeah. And what was it very organized? Because I know there is this movie depiction that everyone's like half drunk all the time, waving their cutlasses around the place. You really needed some level of organization to be effective at this.
They were very organized, but you have to split into two separate periods. Prior to 1700, it was largely these Red Sea men. They were very organized. They were often backed by colonial governors and merchants, and it was not a lifestyle. It was more an opportunity to get rich quick, come back, and settle in the colonies. There's a totally different kind of piracy that erupted after the War of the Spanish Succession, and that's when pirate ships were attacking ships along the American colonies, transiting between the colonies and England. And this is the time when Blackbeard and Stede Bonnet and other pirates that people have heard about were operating. And they were the ones who had the black flag, the Jolly Roger. They were the ones who had the Articles of Agreement or the Pirate Code that sort of laid out a democratic way of organizing themselves, distributing booty, electing their captain. And they were the ones who were particularly vicious, although the Red Sea pirates were vicious. And they were the true enemies of all mankind. And that sort of launched the second great war against the pirates between 1715 and 1726. And that's the era that most of your listeners would be familiar with. It's the one that's depicted in the Pirates of the Caribbean and a lot of black sails and stuff like that.
And this the pirate code, I'm glad that there was a pirate code because it sounds cool. So what would be the process of then electing a captain?
Well, they would get together in something called a council, and they would all vote on who they wanted to lead them. And the captain, he got a couple of perks, one of which is he got a slightly larger share of the booty. Instead of it being equally shared among everybody, the captain might get 1.5 or 2 shares. And he was in total control during battle or when they were attacking victims. But at other times, he was just one of the people on the ship, and a lot of votes were taken on where they would go to find prey, which ships they would attack. And there are instances when the proletariat, so to speak, the men on board the pirate ship got dissatisfied with their captain and voted him out, sometimes marooning him on an island.
Now, and how vicious were they, Did they have to be vicious every time, or just, if you like, generate a reputation for viciousness?
It was the latter. They had, you know, the Jolly Roger, the Black Flag, was this terrifying calling card. Every once in a while, they would attack and kill some of their victims. And that was enough to maintain their really threatening and scary brand identity. So most of the times, pirates didn't have to fight, because once the Black Flag was raised to the top of the mast, these merchant ships would often surrender. So it was a very effective means of them getting as much treasure as possible with as little risk. Because why would they want to fight? They could get killed. They could damage the ship that they might want to take over. And it just could create more problems than if people just readily surrendered.
There was one chap called Edward Lowe. Was he genuinely vicious?
He was genuinely vicious. A lot of people ask me who my favorite pirate was. I really don't have a favorite. They were a bunch of rogues. But the most fascinating was certainly probably Edward Lowe, and he was a sadistic chap. He operated in the 1720s along the American coast, and he loved torturing and killing his victims. And one of his signature moves was cutting off people's ears and lips and roasting them and forcing the victim to eat their own flesh. One time, a captain of a ship cut a rope that was holding a bag of gold and silver so that the rope sank into the ocean instead of landing in Edward Lowe's hands. Edward Lowe got so incensed that he shot the captain and killed all 32 of his crew members.
Wow. Okay. All right. That's pretty impressive. Blackbeard, why was he called that?
Well, he had a black beard. We know very little
about Blackbeard.
No, he did have a black beard. There were a couple of people that were attacked by him who mentioned that he was a tall, spare gentleman with a black beard. But we really don't know a lot more about him other than the way he ultimately died. He had a very short career, less than 2 years. He didn't accumulate a lot in the way of treasure, although he had a large fleet at one time of four pirate ships. But it's really the way that he died that is most fascinating. Lieutenant Robert Maynard from England, he was sent out by the Virginia governor to track down Blackbeard, found him and his men off Ocracoke Island. They got into a massive battle, and Blackbeard was killed, shot and run through many times. And then Maynard severed Blackbeard's head and hung it from the bowsprit of his sloop as he paraded the rest of the pirates back to Williamsburg, Virginia. And there's a legend that they threw Blackbeard's headless body into the murky waters of Pamlico Sound, where he took a few laps around the ship before sinking out of sight.
And he still haunts the place,
yes.
Presumably.
Blackbeard's a huge character down in the Carolinas.
And I suppose the fact that actually not that much is known about Blackbeard is kind of the point, in the sense that for these pirates to have any sort of a life when they were back on land, I assume people had to not know they were pirates, that they, you know, kind of blended back into the general populace.
No, well, the pirates prior to 1700, they were often the brothers, sons, and fathers of the colonists, so it was very easy for them to blend back into the colonies. Pirates during Blackbeard's time, very, very few of them melted back into the general population. Hundreds of them were hanged. Many of them were killed in battle. It was really a short, brutish life. So their exploits were well known, because this is a time when newspapers were coming online and people would talk a lot about these pirate attacks. But the reason that Blackbeard is so well known today is in large part because of an author named Charles Johnson, who wrote a general history of pirates in the 1720s. And he painted a really fantastical portrait of Blackbeard as this womanizing pirate. He supposedly had 14 wives and he was very violent. The reality is that he wasn't violent at all. We have very few instances in which he killed or maimed any of his victims, and his reputation grew very large after his death, because he had good public relations after the fact, and he had a great name. Great name.
In researching this book, Eric, any or many pirates have only one leg and had a peg instead?
I did not find a single pirate with a peg leg, although there is one I talk about. There is a guy who, he wasn't a pirate. He was, he was a pirate. He's trying to get away. He's trying to escape, but a cannonball shot off one of his legs, and I don't know if he later got a peg leg. So the patches, there might have been patches, and there were people who had peg legs back then. But think about how difficult it is to maneuver on a ship on the ocean with two good legs. Having a peg leg might be a great disadvantage. So if there were, maybe they were let off.
and the whole parrot on the shoulder
Parrot on the shoulder might have been more realistic, because a lot of pirates spent many months, especially during the winter time, down in the Caribbean or in tropical areas, and there were a number of animals on board pirate ships and parrots as well. I don't know if they walked around on the pirate's shoulder.
But you never know. You never know.
It's also, arg is probably something that no pirate of the Golden Age ever really uttered. It's more a byproduct of Hollywood in the mid-1900s. And I didn't come across any pirates who had a hook for a hand. Although, again, at that time, there were people who lost hands or arms who did have prosthetics, and it could have been a hook. So it's not beyond the realm of possibility. But again, there are no records of it happening.
Eric, thanks very much for speaking with us today.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by 123.ie. Don't make insurance a hot topic. Just go to 123.ie, where simple is smarter.